Good morning. The time is now 10:03, and we will start the public meeting for the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I am the chair. I am here with Shamari Wade and Norma Hutchinson. We are the three sitting members of the board, and we therefore have a quorum for today's meeting. We'll go ahead and get started with the adoption of the agenda. Do we have any amendments to the agenda?
I do have one amendment. I failed to include the technical amendments to the OOG complaint regulation and the OOG Establishment Act that I would like to discuss today. So I'll add that as the last item, item number E, on the agenda.
Any other amendments? I will entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as amended by Director Hughes.
I'll move to adopt the agenda as amended.
Second.
All in favor of adopting the agenda as amended, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Great. All right, we'll start with you, Director Hughes.
Thank you, Chairperson Collier, members of the board. On December 7th, the Office of Open Government submitted a proposed order to the court in the Yates matter. The only point of contention between the Office of Open Government and the Office of the Attorney General at this point is OOG's insertion of a requirement of the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean and Community Affairs that it submit its draft agenda to OOG 2 weeks in advance so that the office can review to ensure compliance and that the commission publish its meetings on the OOG central calendar. The Office of Open Government made it clear in the wording of the order that we are seeking the additional steps by the commission so that we may work with them to comply, and it is not being requested as a punitive measure. So what you have before you is a copy of the order. There's been no court action as of yet. Assuming that the parties don't reach an agreement, which I don't anticipate, there's supposed to be a hearing on this matter on March 2nd of 2018. We also note that one of the other reasons that we included this in this order is that the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean and Community Affairs has been conducting meetings, and we noticed some deficiencies in the agendas that are being posted online already.
Is there anything in the OMA or any of the implementing regulations that would give the office the authority to require this pre-approval of the agenda?
No, that's why we're asking this as part of the judge's order, given the history of the case. Since the last board meeting, the Office of Open Government has received 4 Open Meetings Act complaints. One pertained to the subcommittee meetings of the Cross-Sector Collaboration Task Force. Another was submitted by a former administrative law judge in connection with the Commission on Selection and Tenure of Administrative Law Judges. And the remaining 2 are both submitted in connection with a meeting of the United Medical Center Board of Directors that occurred last week. Over the past 6 weeks, the Office of Open Government has issued 1 FOIA opinion and 1 Open Meetings Act opinion. The OOG responded to 16 requests for informal FOIA advice and 10 requests for OMA advice. As an aside, 2 OOG advisory opinions on FOIA were included in the national roundup of developments in FOIA that were presented at the COGL conference. So I'd like to give credit where credit is due. My colleague Johnny Bartner were 2 of the opinions that he drafted on behalf of the office that were recognized in this national roundup.
Excellent.
The OOG conducted 2 Open Meetings Act trainings. One was combined ethics and OMA training. The other was for persons serving as points of contact for public bodies. Both OMA trainings were facilitated by the Mayor's Office of Talent and Appointments. The office also conducted 3 FOIA trainings. Finally, the technical amendments to the Office of Open Government Complaint Regulation and the OOG Establishment Act. We have provided as a courtesy to the board a red line version so you don't have to read the line legislative draft bill itself. So I'll give Jack a moment to distribute.
We have
you have them, okay. The OOG has submitted the office to the Office of Documents and Issuances for publication in the December 22nd DC Register technical amendments to the OOG complaints regulation. The purpose of the amended rulemaking is to amend 3 DCMR 10404 to make discretionary the resolution of Open Meetings Act complaints by conciliation by amending section 10404.1 by striking will and inserting may. To make clear the effect of the use of conciliation to resolve a complaint by amending 3 DCMR 10404.2 by striking will and inserting shall. to conform to the enforcement authority of the Office of Open Government under the regulations with the Open Meetings Act by amending 3 DCMR 10404.4 by inserting the Open Meetings Act or in front of these regulations, and to conform to the statutory enforcement authority of the Office of Open Government by amending 3 DCMR 10406.4 by striking willfully disregarded and inserting violated and striking shall and inserting may. The OOG has also prepared a draft Office of Open Government Clarifying and Technical Amendment Act of 2018 to conform with the advice the OOG has consistently provided to public bodies to, one, allow for the posting of draft meeting minutes on the website within 3 business days upon the conclusion of a meeting, rather than final meeting minutes to be drafted within 3 business days upon the conclusion of a meeting. 2, striking the phrase Open Government Office and inserting Office of Open Government. 3, the inclusion of the option of conciliation as a form of resolution of Open Meetings Act complaints to conform with the regulation. And 4, to clarify that it is feasible for public bodies to do the following: establish an annual schedule of meetings, record meetings by electronic means, and include in draft agendas a statement of intent to close a meeting or any part of a meeting. It is my hope that Councilmember Allen will agree to put the legislation forward as part of the Budget Support Act. Since the changes are technical and clarifying, some of which are necessary in light of the September 22, 2017 court order in the Yates matter. So you have before you the red line version, and I'm happy to answer any questions along with my colleague, Johnny Barton.
Well, first, we will need a chance to go over this. And so I'd like to have time to discuss this with Mr. Grimaldi and the board meetings before the board provides input on all of this. I do have some preliminary questions, and my colleagues may have some as well, regarding the proposed rulemaking and the conciliation. If I understand it, the regulations currently require conciliation, and the change is to make it discretionary. One, what is the purpose of the change? And two, how does the office determine when conciliation is appropriate for a complaint?
Well, what has precipitated this, as the board is likely aware, is that this was a discussion that was raised in connection with the opinion that was issued by the Office of Open Government concerning Open Meetings Act violations that have occurred with the Commission on the Selection and the Tenure of Administrative Law Judges. As I noted for the board in closed session at that time, we have not ever used conciliation because it was outside the scope of the statute. That is the reason why we are including it in the technical and clarifying amendments for the legislation itself, and then also to make it discretionary in the regulations. The reason that we're making it discretionary and the criteria that we intend to use is that if there is simply a simple fix to cure a violation of the Open Meetings Act, then conciliation would absolutely be appropriate. So it allows us the ability to do that. So it's a form of mediation, basically.
So is there a third party involved in the conciliation?
Well, the parties involved would have to involve the complainant, him or herself, and then also this office, and then the offending public body. There would be no other.
Okay, so this office would, the OOG would serve as the facilitator.
Yes, yes.
My second question goes to the proposed amendments to the OMA, removing, if feasible, for the publishing of yearly meetings. That makes absolute sense to me for boards like us who meet on a monthly basis. What about boards who only meet as needed to handle specific issues? Cost may be one of them, I don't know. My concern is making a requirement of publishing your meetings a year ahead of time, and that publication isn't going to mean very much if people will cancel the meetings or change them as the time gets closer.
I'm not aware of any public body that only meets on an ad hoc basis. It's my understanding, and I'll go back and review. I mean, there are 175 plus boards and commissions, but I have not come across yet a public body in my 4.5 years here that meets on an ad hoc basis. Typically, required, even in their establishing act or the mayor's order, to meet quarterly. The dates may not be established, but they're required to meet certain time frames to come together as a body.
Okay. Do you all have any questions?
I don't have any questions.
I'll review it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, Director Hughes?
That concludes my report. I'm sorry.
Thank you. All right, turning now to our new director. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have been eagerly anticipating your arrival. I don't think we are at full staff now, but we're getting there. So I want to welcome you. I want to also thank Mr. Brian Flowers for serving as interim director. As we work to bring you on board. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. Before I begin my report, one thing we'd like to ask the board to consider is a motion to approve the minutes of the November 9th, 2017 board meeting. I believe the board has been provided with those minutes. Historically, it's my understanding that the Office of Government Ethics has just posted the actual oral recordings of the meetings, and we've reduced those to writing, and our intention is to publish the written minutes to the website as well.
I see. Those were the meetings that were actually in the Dropbox from, okay, that makes sense. All right, so I move that we approve for publication the meeting minutes from the November 9th, 2017 meeting.
No, I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you. Moving on to our report, update on our operations. Over the past month, we opened no new investigations. We closed 11. We currently have 9 investigations open, and there are 9 investigations that have been stayed or in active status. One of those stayed cases is an instance where it's pending in court. The individual in question is a fugitive. There is one investigation that is pending motions in the OEA. We have 4 investigations that are currently stayed as the Office of the Inspector General is conducting related investigations. 2 of our investigations are stayed because the Office of the Attorney General has pending Civil False Claims Act matters in action. And 1 investigation is stayed because both the Office of the Inspector General and the Office of the Attorney General are looking at the matter for different purposes. So that is a summary of the 9 state cases that we currently are awaiting action from other entities. Publication and reporting obligations. We have no outstanding publication or reporting obligations at this time. We've had several meetings on the status of the BEGA website since the last board meeting and have made a number of tweaks to the website to include updating our training presentations, adding descriptions to advisory opinions, and linking to the Office of Open Government for the OGE's FOIA resources. We met with OCTO, which added a FOIA/Open Government page to the BEGA website that is consistent with other DC.gov sites in the district government. We're proposing to redesign certain elements to highlight important material, and we do realize that this is an ongoing process that will only improve with input from the public and other shareholders as they interact with the website. We want to make sure it is as user-friendly as possible. We've also been working with OCTO on the design, testing, and implementation of our updated FDS and lobbyist filing systems. OCTO has informed us that they expect to conduct about a week of quality control testing on the new systems around January 15th, during which time they will address and rectify any bugs uncovered during the QC testing. At that point, our staff will spend about a week performing what they call user acceptance testing in OCTO's software test environment. And if all goes well, OCTO has informed us that the new systems should be ready to, quote unquote, go live around the middle of February, which would be in time for the next FDS filing season. So we will keep the board posted as those developments progress.
Thank you. Going back to the website, I'm happy to hear that we're moving in the right direction. You addressed issues of design and also updating the material. The third prong on that that I was most concerned about was policy, and that's making sure that we consistently post the same type of information on the website. We do not have the resources and probably don't have the space to post every single document that is subject to FOIA disclosure on the website, but we should be consistent about what information that we will proactively post on the website. And so I just want to make sure we aren't losing track of that third prong.
Absolutely. Next item on our report is trainings and outreach. Attorney Advisor Janet Foster, General Counsel Flowers, Director Hughes from the Office of Open Government, and Attorney Advisor Johnny Barton attended the COGL conference last month. The conference offered presentations on ethics investigations and enforcement, as well as programs on emerging trends in FOIA law. One point that was noted by Chicago's ethics agency was that sexual harassment enforcement and training had been added to their jurisdiction and responsibilities. And we'd like to bring to the board's attention that the sexual harassment policy guidance and procedures mayor's order that was recently signed by Mayor Bowser contains a provision in Section 5K that recognizes that some claims of sexual harassment, quote, may also involve ethical violations, such as if an employee is giving gifts to an employee for sexual favors or to a potential reporter of sexual harassment, or if an employee is using government resources to copy and disseminate inappropriate pictures, unquote. The order from the mayor reinforces the responsibility of employees to report credible violations of this nature to VEGA.
And what is VEGA's policy if we do indeed receive such a complaint? It obviously involves ethical issues that are under our jurisdiction, but if it also involves a sexual harassment claim, do we report that forward?
I believe that is probably the policy that we would follow to make sure that we're not the only entity that's looking at that. If there's another entity that needs to be conducting its own investigations.
Human rights?
We would make that referral. Regarding trainings that have been conducted by our staff, we conducted 14 trainings, which is double the 7 conducted last month. However, it must be noted that this measures trainings that were conducted over a 6-week period rather than a 2-week period, and it follows our intensive Ethics Day training program. The 14 trainings include 3 new employee orientation and MSS FDS trainings, 2 general boards and commissions trainings, an annual training session at the DC Retirement Board, 1 at PERB, a DGS Hatch Act training, and a lobbying training workshop. We are continuing to develop a VEGA Roadshow, which is a presentation intended for the public. It is roughly 80% completed and designed to let the public know what we do and how well we are doing these things, so it includes some of our performance statistics as well as noting several of our important public cases. Regarding our advisory opinions and advice, we provided approximately 71 instances of informal advice last month since the last meeting, significantly up from 45 the previous month. However, again, we are measuring based on a 6-week period as opposed to a 2-week period. We have no pending requests at this time for formal ethics advice or opinions. And regarding the ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct, the proposed resolution to approve former Director Darren Sobin as a new board member was reported out of the Council's Judiciary Committee on Tuesday, December 19th, and it is anticipated that the Council will act on this PR at its January meeting. Rulemaking. There have been no new developments, but there are 2 pending proposals. The 30-day public comment period ended on November 20th for the rulemaking that ensures that our rules are consistent with the Council Financial Disclosure Amendment Act of 2016, effective April 7th, 2017, which is DC Law 21-240. That legislation requires the chairman and each member of the council to file a public financial disclosure statement semi-annually on May 15th and November 15th of each year. No comments were received on the proposed rule, and all 13 council members have filed. Those financial disclosure statements are available on our website, and we are asking the board to adopt the final rulemaking today.
So I do have a couple of questions on that. For purposes of the other board members, the document in the Dropbox, was not the right document. It had some mistakes in it. The actual rulemaking, I think, is back to you all to make some edits for the dates. So I'll leave it up to you. We can adopt the rulemaking as it should be, and you conform, or we can move this until next month. It's up to you.
Yeah, I believe we could just conform it.
Okay. So what we're voting on is not a specific document, but the rulemaking itself, which requires the chairman and council members to file public financial disclosures twice a year. So all in favor of approving this rulemaking signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
The second proposal concerns the review of the list of boards and commissions whose members we believe should be required to file public financial statements but are not currently required to do so. We briefly spoke with Stephen Walker, the director of the Mayor's Office of Talent and Appointments, but want to have a formal meeting or receive his input before submitting the list to you. One issue is whether members of regulatory and licensing boards, such as the Board of Medicine or Board of Cosmetology, should be required to file. Under the previous Ethics Act, they did. However, most now do not file. The budget, our budget review team meeting is scheduled for January 5th, and we have continued to hold our monthly budget meetings. Staffing, we still have two new administrative positions to fill. Interviews were conducted for the paralegal specialist position, and those applications are currently under review.
What about the second position? Have you all discussed what you're going to do with that one?
We briefly discussed it, and I think part of the process is for me to get a better idea of exactly how our operations have been conducted and to see if there are some additional efficiencies that we might be able to gain by using that other position in a way maybe it hadn't been envisioned before. So we'll keep the board posted as those discussions and consideration progress. Regarding lobbyist financial disclosure matters, we are approaching peak lobbying season with activity reports reflecting lobbying activity during the last 6 months of 2017 due by January 10th, 2018, and re-registrations due January 16th, 2018. Earlier this month, we conducted an in-person training for lobbyists regarding the e-filing system, and we have already begun sending reminder notices to registered lobbyists regarding the deadlines. There's also a request for a fee waiver, and I believe Jana is going to speak on that.
Good morning. I just realized that I neglected to upload to your Dropbox the actual fee waiver request. So I have a copy of that if you'd like to see it. But the gist of it was a lobbyist late filed his July 2017 lobbying activity report by one day. And he certified essentially under oath that he was experiencing internet connectivity issues. So he uploaded all of the information on the due date, but it didn't actually get transmitted until the following date. We have no opposition to this request, and so I've prepared an order for you all to sign, unless you have any questions regarding this request.
Any questions?
No questions for me.
All in favor of granting the waiver request, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Stand up. Financial disclosure matters. Regarding public financial disclosure statements, we're still working to get all non-compliant public financial disclosure statements filers to file their forms via our e-filing system. Since our last board meeting, we discovered that some non-filers are separated from the district. There are seven non-filers. We have submitted garnishment memos to OCFO in the fine amount of $300 for each non-filer. Our next step is to reach out to the non-filers supervisor or agency head. Regarding the confidential financial disclosure statements for calendar year 2017, we're currently reviewing CFDS reports and following up with ethics officers. We will soon compile a list of CFDS non-filers and begin the enforcement process. Next item on our report is non-confidential investigations. There are two matters that I believe Asia is going to discuss with the board.
Good morning. So the first matter is 1630-001, M. Ray A. Moon. If you recall, you approved a notice of violation for Mr. Moon at the September meeting. Mr. Moon filed both his 2016 and 2017 confidential financial disclosure forms on November 6, 2017, making them 18 months and 6 months late, respectively. Though Mr. Moon filed his confidential financial disclosure forms, he filed them extremely late and has only, and has only been fined $300 thus far. On December 7, 2017, the Office of Government Ethics interviewed Mr. Moon and offered him a negotiated disposition in this matter. On December 19, 2017, Mr. Moon signed a negotiated disposition agreeing to pay a fine of $600. We're asking the board to approve the negotiated disposition, and I believe that Jack has it. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
I've read through the materials. I have one question. I believe you interviewed Mr. Moon. What was his reasoning for filing
the forms late? Well, he's a DDOT employee, and he is in the field a lot. He's an inspector. So basically, he was just saying he just does not, he's not in the office that much, and he doesn't check his email as often as he should. Whether that's acceptable or not, we thought that the $600 fine was a good, considering that he had already been fined $300 for 2016.
Well, the $600 includes the $300, or is he paying a total of $9?
After this, it'll be a total of $9 because he's already been fined
$300.
I see. So an additional $300 was like kind of punitive because it was kind of egregious because it's been a really long time, especially for the 2016 form.
That answers my question. Yes. Okay. So the punitive part of this would be approximately $300.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
No questions.
And you're also moving to dismiss then.
Yes. Sorry about that. So the NOV that that you approved in September, we're also moving to have that dismissed since we have entered into negotiated disposition with them.
All right.
Thank you, Jack.
All in favor of dismissing the NOV and approving the negotiated disposition, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We'll sign the order.
Thank you.
Has he already paid the $300?
The first $300 for the 2016 form, yes, it was garnished from his district government employment check. Okay. The next matter is 1641-001, N. Ray R. French. At the September meeting, you guys also approved a notice of violation for Mr. French. Like Mr. Moon, Mr. French filed his 2016 and 2017 confidential financial disclosure forms on November 6, 2017, 18 months and 6 months late, respectively. He filed them after being served with the notice of violation. Though Mr. French filed his confidential financial disclosure forms, he filed them extremely late and has also been fined $300 thus far. On December 7, 2017, the Office of Government Ethics interviewed Mr. French and offered him an opportunity to settle the matter in the form of a negotiated disposition. On December 8, 2017, Mr. French declined the offer to settle and requested to proceed with a full and adversarial hearing before the board. We'd like to discuss next steps with you in scheduling if the hearing is something that we think that we should move forward with.
I believe we've had discussions as well as possibly resolving the matter through a ministerial fine. And we're not opposed to that, taking that route either. We would defer to the board's wishes and how it would like to have us address Mr. French's position.
Yeah, to update the board, there are two steps to take. We can continue along the NOV process and have an adversarial hearing with all of us or some of us as the adjudicators, or there's also a process by which the director can issue a ministerial fine, and then he can appeal that fine to the board. It does not give him a hearing, but if the concern is he wants an audience or he wants the board to hear his concerns, then it could potentially be addressed through this ministerial fine and appeal process versus a hearing. The question before us is, since we've already gone down the NOV process, should we stick with that, or can we use this ministerial fine process and achieve the same effect? I will tell you, given the nature of this NOV, I'm inclined to pursue the ministerial fine process instead of having a full hearing. But I'd like to hear your input.
What's his reason? What's his reason for not filing?
He didn't really have much of a reason. He acknowledged that this was out there and it was something that he was required to do. So it was a little bit of this. They're both DDOT employees and they both do, I think, almost the same exact thing. Their inspectors out in the field. I think it has something to do with trees or something like that. So he is just not in the office a lot, but he generally acknowledged that he kind of was aware. I don't know if he was acknowledging that he was aware back in 2016 or if he became aware once I started trying to contact
him. Absent anything extenuating, I don't see why we'd have to have a hearing on that. That's the defense. So
well,
I'd prefer for a ministerial hearing or a ministerial fine.
That seems to make sense.
Yeah. The only reason we're discussing it is because he declined the negotiated disposition and said that he would do the hearing. So, but we have another way to get to our end goal without the hearing.
That might be a better.
I think most efficient.
Yeah.
But let's not dismiss the NOV yet. Let's let you all work that administrative process, and then we'll dismiss it once we have a better sense of how that's going.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Wolfenbarger, does that complete your update?
That completes the public portion of our report, absolutely.
All right, we will now have an opportunity for the public. I believe we have Mr. Syndrome on the phone.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members, others with the sound of my voice. Michael Syndrome, disabled veteran, served our country more than most. Excuse me, Madam Chair, for my ignorance, but what is the name of the new director, Biga?
Brent Wolfenbarger.
What is it again?
Brent Wolf. I can't scream. Brent Wolfenbarger.
Last name is Berner.
W-O-L-F-B-A. No.
It's Wolfenbarger, and it's spelled W-O-L-F-I-N-G-B-A-R-G-E-R. First name is Brent, B-R-E-N-T.
I'll shorten it. Thank you, Mr. Brent. Welcome. Madam Chair, there is a concern, and that is this. With the Public Service Commission, which are District of Columbia employees, however, they are not under the jurisdiction, watch, or in your bailiwick of Biga. That ought not be. That shows and demonstrates selective prosecution, if you will. So I'm requesting that the Public Service Commission employees be brought under your watch, however that's done, through council legislation or submitting a request or maybe in-house policy. I would defer to your expertise on accomplishing that. But again, if you do it for the goose, you got to do it for the gander. And if you selectively omit some folks, the rest who come under your watch will say, you know, this is selective prosecution. Either you do it for one, you do it for all, or you do it for none.
Thank you, Mr. Syndrom.
And I would like to conclude, Madam Chair, it is the veteran. It is the veteran, not the preacher, who has given us freedom of religion. It is the veteran, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the veteran, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the veteran, not the campus organizer, who has given us freedom to assemble. It is the veteran, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the veteran, not the politician, who has given us the right to vote. It is the veteran who salutes the flag, who serves under the flag. God bless America and our troops. I'd be delighted to field any questions at the time, Madam Chair.
There are no questions, Mr. Syndrom. Board members, I will now entertain a motion to go into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B13 and personnel matters pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B10.
I move that we go into executive session.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? No. The time is now 10:38. We will now move into executive session. All right, the time is now 11:43. We are back on the record in the public session. We have one matter to report out. That's investigation number 1398-001, In Re Courtney Snowden. We are just making that a public investigation at this point. If we have no further matters, we will convene this meeting. The next board meeting will be January the 4th at 10 a.m. Thank you.